This episode is sponsored by Verisk Marketing Solutions. The future of consumer experience requires a deeper data-driven understanding of identity, behavior, and privacy. Join marketing leaders and industry execs at the VIA 2023 Consumer Insights and Experience Summit, September 18th and 19th in Chicago's Fulton Market District. They'll explain how they can future-proof their businesses and do right by their customers with you. Spots are limited. Register now at marketing.verisk.com/VIA.
Keep in mind, we're still seeing, you know, employment numbers, pretty strong ones. So there, we haven't entered that phase of, where people might have to, you know, have no choice but to not travel.
Hey gang, it's Tuesday, July 25th. Oscar, Zach, and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily, an e-market podcast made possible by Verisk Marketing Solutions. I'm Marcus. Today I'm joined by two folks. Let's meet them immediately. We start with one of our directors of forecasting based out of New York. It's Oscar Orozco.
Hello, hello, Marcus.
Hey, fella.
How are you?
Good, sir. How are you?
Doing well.
We're also joined by someone else on the forecasting team, one of our senior analysts on that team based out of Colorado.
That's correct, Marcus. Thanks for having me. Hello, listeners.
Zach Goldner, ladies and gentlemen. I'm so glad you're based out of Colorado. Zach has lived everywhere somehow, and he's crazy young. But I'm glad that you live in Colorado, because my fact of the day is Colorado-related, themed, if you will. If you weren't, not from Colorado, but you're based there, if you weren't based there, then it would be pretty random. Fact of the day, I only have the one, so we're gonna have this regardless of where you're based, Zach, but I'm glad you're there. So why is Colorado called Colorado? Because Spanish explorers named the river that ran through the area Colorado, meaning colored red. So Colorado means colored red. Oscar, you're our Spanish speaker, is that true?
Yeah, sort of, but yes, it means like it has colors, and okay. So I actually knew this. I know,
oh, you did?
You know me with my history, though.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
maybe, you know.
Color red for its muddy red hue, and so eventually the territory became named Colorado. Yeah, that's the fact. Anyway, today's real topic: are we back to traveling again? So in today's episode, first in the lead, we'll cover whether folks are back to their old vacationing ways. Then for in other news, we'll discuss whether gamifying shopping works and what to make of getting so many texts from brands, from companies. We start with the lead, of course. So how long will this travel boom last? A recent Economist article asked this. It notes that after a rocky few years, the urge to splurge on airline tickets and hotels is set to bring in bumper earnings. Gents, there's a travel boom going on. How long will it last?
Well, travel is back. But, you know, we said this also last year as well. But, you know, it's more back, exactly. You know, it was definitely busier last year than it was in 2021. But it was still below pre-pandemic levels. I feel like people might not have realized that since there was so much pent-up demand.
Yes.
But, you know, when you look even at car travel in the U.S. interstates last year, for example, it was still lower than in 2019. But it's totally back, totally back. Mm-hmm. I was looking at a survey from TripIt. They found that 90% of Americans have traveled in the last 3 months, and about three quarters plan to fly domestically this summer. It's domestically, it's internationally. I think we can fully say that for the most part, travel is, you know, up at the same level or above where we were in 2019.
I mean, you mentioned car travel. One reason, I mean, gas prices, right? Record high of $5 a gallon last year, and a gallon of regular recently averaged about $3.60, according to AAA. So that's come down significantly. And over half the US states, gas is less than $3.50. So that's definitely helped road trips become more affordable this year.
Yeah, and going along with tandem with the gas prices are airline tickets as well. So
yep.
Airfares are going down. What we're seeing with that as well is I can imagine travel really booming as long as people are okay with going over the fiascos that have been happening in the travel industry. So as you may have remembered back in December of last year. There's a lot of chaos going on with Southwest Airlines. It still is happening with United too. But people are seeing cheaper airfares as long as they remain lower than they were historically and the economy remains out of a recession. I can still see the momentum carrying forward and travel continuing to boom.
Yeah, the Southwest situation. Last year's, kind of mass cancellations left a bad taste in travelers' mouths. And a lot of that could have spilled into this year. 25% of all US flights were cancelled or delayed last summer. And so people remember that and so might be more hesitant to booking flights this year. And that costs a lot. Southwest Airlines estimated that cancellations of nearly 17,000 flights in December led to them incurring $800 million in losses. So that really adds up.
I think that, putting the positive spin on it, that it's not having much of an impact, I think, sure, it left a bad taste in some travelers' mouths, but there's just so much pent-up demand, so much, as we're seeing with the economy, you touched on that a little bit, people are definitely prioritizing, essential goods, pretty much, and travel, and experiences,
right,
things like that. And that's definitely what's driving just these high travel numbers that we're seeing. I mean, it's not just airlines. We've seen it from hotel booking numbers out there that show that, people are booking hotels at a high rate, rentals, mm-hmm. even the cruise industry for the first time in years, we're hearing some positive signs from there.
Very positive signs. I mean, everyone pronounced cruises kind of dead and gone right after the pandemic. And Jacob Passy of the Wall Street Journal was noting that cruise lines are seeing occupancy levels above 100% on many ships, largely due to discounts and promotions that they offered last fall and winter. So that cruises are back.
Exactly. I think it has a little bit to do with, when we think of cruises, we do think of maybe older Americans. There was, the fear about COVID was something that lingered for a while, and that's definitely dissipated. So I think some of these travelers are more comfortable traveling. I've even heard from my own mom, who never would have wanted to go on a cruise. She's been telling me she wants to go on one, which is surprising to me, but speaks to, also people just wanting to get back out there, and cruises is another way to do it.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of which, there's a new cruise line. I want to say it's coming from the Royal Caribbean that's going to be 5 times greater than the Titanic.
5 times bigger.
You're not going to catch me on that. 5 times bigger.
That is humongous.
Yeah, that's too big. But I mean, Oscar, you mentioned pent-up demand. It's easy to forget that last summer, last June, July, was just 6 months away from Omicron, COVID variant. And so summer last year, people were just kind of still reeling from that whole debacle. And so this summer is the first real summer where, or the summer's had a real kind of a good amount of runway, and people had a good run up to the summer, as opposed to still feeling a lot of the shocks from that fiasco.
Absolutely. Like there was a Gallup poll from last, it was May 2022, said 40% of people had been avoiding travel by plane, bus, subway, train, all of it, because of COVID fears. And the most recent survey they did in February of this year, that had fallen to 18%. That's a very significant drop. So, a lot of people who, as you said, 6 months removed from Omicron, just were not ready to travel, now are.
Some of this tailwind is inflation related. The Economist was noting airfares rising faster than inflation, and so global airline bosses, they say, expecting nearly $10 billion in net income this year. That's more than double the amount that was initially forecast, according to the International Air Transport Association. However, it's not just the dollars that look better. Number of passengers, I mean, Oscar, you mentioned numbers not quite at pre-pandemic levels, even if they'd gotten better. One of those figures was worldwide tourist arrivals. Worldwide tourist arrivals this year expected to reach up to 95% of pre-pandemic levels. Last year, they were at 63%, according to the UN's World Tourism Organization. And if you look in the US, the Federal Transportation Security Administration, TSA, projecting that more people will board flights this summer than in 2019. So travel really starting to get back to those pre-pandemic levels, close to, at, or some cases, just above.
It's interesting you mentioned the article, Marcus. in that article as well, it does talk about how the third largest travel group are Chinese travelers. And roughly three quarters of those, even today, are still not willing to do international travel and go on their same luxurious travel locations that they would have pre-pandemic. Instead, they're opting for staycations, which would not necessarily benefit the U.S. economy or the other markets that we may be looking in our forecast.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Last point for me, Marcus, I would say keep in mind, right, it was May of this year, international passengers traveling here no longer have to show proof of vaccination, right? So that's opening up the border for a lot of people who previously weren't able to enter the country.
Yeah, it's a great point. And then environmental roadblocks haven't helped as well. There's been fires in Canada, smoke coming down, hitting vast parts of the U.S., not to mention what they're doing in their kind of origin country of Canada, and tornadoes in kind of the whole right half of the country have caused all kinds of delays. The Bureau of Transportation statistics saying that just over 19% of flights were delayed last year, and that's up a bit from 2018. So even when people are booking, things aren't going as smoothly as they once used to, or as they're hoping that they will. How do we think economic climate is changing how people think about vacations?
I think, you know, I mentioned it a bit earlier, it's not having as much of an impact just because, you know, the desire, the demand, the necessity for certain people is just has overcome any maybe issues that people might be dealing with economically speaking, whether it's inflation or, you know, and also keep in mind, we're still seeing, you know, employment numbers, pretty strong ones. So we haven't entered that phase of, where people might have to, you know, have no choice but to not travel.
I will
mention though, there's something we don't talk about often, but we're you know, come September, all the student loan repayments are going to start again.
Great point.
Of course, it's very possible that the situation might become a bit more dire. I'm curious to see what holiday travel will look like. It'll really be the main sort of determinant on how the year plays out, right, overall for travel. I mean, but I think for sure summer travel is going to be heightened and high. But again, that holiday travel is what I think we should look out for.
Yeah, and I'd like to call it a mixed impact of the economic climate, of its impact on travel. So first thing is gasoline being lower than it was last year. And you did comment that, but what that means is both airfares have gone down, as well as people at home, they've got lower electricity costs, lower gas prices for their own homes. And that means more discretionary income that they're able to spend on travel. So with that, they may see more opportunity to go out. But I think the other factor of why you're seeing more travel this year too, is that during the pandemic, when people are staying inside for a year or longer, the thing they want to do most is have experiences. They want to go see family. They want to go to Mexico or to a new resort they'd never been to. And with that, I think you've got both of those factors that have been helping it inflate the travel industry this last year.
Yeah, all great points. Oscar, going back to what you were saying about unemployment, you know, the fact that folks have jobs and so they have money to spend. Unemployment in the US has been 4% or below for the last 18 months. It's not all bad when you look at the economic backdrop. This year's changes to summer vacation plans due to inflation, according to a recent Bankrate survey, Americans most likely, in terms of changes they're going to make to their summer vacation plans, they're most likely to select less expensive accommodation and then engage in cheaper activities on the trip. They're the ways they're most likely to change their plans because things cost more. Let's finish the lead, gents, by talking about the way people choose where they're going on vacation. So Gen Zers are basing their travel plans on where TV shows like White Lotus are set, writers Grace Dean and Hannah Toey of our sister company Business Insider. They note that when season one was broadcast, web traffic to the Four Seasons Macau Resort, which is featured in the show, increased over 400% year on year, according to the COO. In addition to that, during season two, flight and hotel searches from the US to Sicily grew more than 50%, according to travel app Hopper. So, gents, what do you make of the way people choose where to go on vacation changing. Is this a trend?
Well, Marcus, first of all, have you seen White Lotus?
I've not, no.
Not? If you were to see it, you'd want to book a travel stay there as well. So I don't blame anyone.
I don't know. Apparently, it's not the cheapest hotel. Is it like $3,500 some of the rooms go for?
Yeah.
It might be cheaper, but it did look like it.
I didn't say I could afford it, but my manager, Oscar, could help push for a little bit better of a raise. Who knows? But my take on this is we do live in a social media world. People want to be able to talk about pop culture, and what better of a way to talk about the place that they just watched it be filmed in, the setting of that.
Yeah.
So I think we're seeing this both for media culture. The article also talked about how this has had impact for years, whether it's the Twilight series in Forks, Washington, which I did go to when I was 8 years old, and I've got a picture of me and the Team Edward, Lord of the Rings in New Zealand, and other locations like that. So yeah. I think that's one area of you're saying experiential travel of people wanting to relive and be able to talk about these places that they've been to that are also in pop culture.
Yeah.
And I think the other element to this as well is people wanting to go to places that others are going as well. With that being said, I want to call out national parks being a big attraction as well. What I've seen in the last year or last couple of years since COVID, national park visits have increased tremendously. But what you're seeing that impact is very isolated to the most popular of national parks. So those like Yellowstone, Arches, Zion, and the most popular trails and scenic viewpoints there are getting overloaded. And that's because other people want to go to it, they see it, and they want to relive the same moment. And that's where I see travel going from there.
Yeah, the trend's called set jetting. Which I hadn't heard of, set to keep growing. American Express and Expedia listing it as one of the top travel trends for 2023 that Business Insider article was noting. Oscar, any thoughts here?
Yeah, to one of Zach's points, I mean, it's really nothing new. I mean, we either take inspiration from our loved ones or friends, but many times from what we see on TV, on the big screen. And I was thinking a lot about the Griswold family and Chevy Chase and the National Lampoon Vacations. Like, when I was younger, I wanted to travel with them in one of these station wagons around the world. So that's always been the case. Croatia is still a hot location because of Game of Thrones. So
yeah,
I really think it's if brands are already not capitalizing, thinking about this from the brand's perspective, capitalizing on this, they really should, especially like hotels and resorts. Yeah. You know,
I also thought it was fascinating. So there's a second article we were looking at for this in terms of the way people choose where to go on vacation and that changing. Julie Weed, freelance writer for the New York Times, was writing, powerful new AI software is already shaking up the travel industry, but she was saying that it has a long way to go until it can plan a seamless trip, AI software that is. However, she goes on to write, quote, one day soon in the AI-powered future, a vacation might start by telling your smartphone something like this. I want to take a four-day trip to Los Angeles in June, whenever airfares and hotel rates are best, using loyalty reward points. I want it to hit a history museum and an amusement park, and then I'd like a 7 p.m. dinner reservation near the hotel at a restaurant with vegan options and a great wine list, and then your phone spits out the perfect itinerary, close quote. I mean, maybe that's the direction we're going in. I wonder how you'd be able to tweak the options that it spat out. Maybe it gives you something, being able to say, okay, actually, maybe we'll push the dinner reservations to a different time. Would it be like when you get your groceries delivered and they present different alternatives to what you initially bought? Maybe you can move it to 8 p.m. They've got an 8 p.m. or they've got, you know, it's not a history museum, but there is a cool art gallery nearby. But that, yeah, concept I think is fascinating in terms of the changing way that we might start booking things.
Oh, we're seeing it. Booking.com, I believe, recently partnered with ChatGPT, and they're trying to move conversational chat capabilities
Expedia
into the app.
Expedia too, I think.
Expedia as well. Yeah. So they're farther along than what we're seeing from other companies.
Yeah.
I mean, I've used it myself.
Oh, you did?
Before my last travel, I was on TikTok, as a young person my age would do. And I came across generative AI
travel guide. Mm-hmm. And what I did is I'm saying I'm going to be staying in this city for X amount of days. Find me different events to do within an X mile radius of the city center. And it would give me the prices of each ticket for the people I'm going with. And give me personalized recommendations. Yeah, it's not perfect, but unfortunately, that's the way that I believe that travel is going.
At the very least, it can help you generate some ideas and create some inspiration for you to maybe then go and book for yourself, so you can feel in complete control of all the different kind of nuances of the trip. Let's end with this, Oscar. You guys are working on some numbers for how much money travel advertisers spend. What are we looking at?
We can tease an upcoming forecast for all the listeners. These numbers should be, you know, live on the site in about 3 weeks, I would say. So we're working on our industry ad spending figures, digital ad spending. What we can say about travel is that it is absolutely number one. It is driving digital advertising. All the travel companies are doubling down, tripling down on their messaging. We saw it in 2022 as well, Marcus. I mean, a company like Carnival has reported that in 2022, they spent, year over year, their spend was up 120%. Wow. 120%. Yeah, Booking and Expedia both up over 45%. So they're trying to target all of the customers that are interested in traveling. So travel will be number one. I would finish off by saying, even on the publisher's side, you know, from Alphabet, Meta, even Pinterest and Snap, I mean, they've all mentioned travel as big, big revenue drivers for them. I know Alphabet launched a new Performance Max for travel goals, sort of ad product for travel companies. And, you know, I think travel, even like I mentioned, Pinterest and Snap, travel are usually not brands that will advertise or utilize these publishers, but they are. And they mentioned that as emerging verticals for them. So travel, number one.
One other comment on our forecast. So we have just more than the US. We have UK, Germany, France, and coming out with this new update, we'll have travel by Canada as well.
Nice. Brand new breakouts as well as an updated forecast. You can head to insiderintelligence.com to get access to that, of course. That's what we've got time for the lead. We're going to skip the halftime report. I want to get straight to the stories we have for you in the second half. So today in other news, does gamifying shopping work? And what to make of brands that are texting us more? Story one, Amazon ran a TikTok game show as part of its Prime Day sales event. Jewel for Deals, as it was called, combined shoppable content in an interactive live streaming experience with a game show format. Sarah Karlovich of Marketing Dive notes that during the event, a bunch of TikTok influencers played a series of games while viewers worked cooperatively in the chat to unlock specific deals. This all took place on Amazon's TikTok channel, where viewers could access the deals without leaving the app. But Zach, the most interesting sentence in this article is what and why?
The most important sentence in this article to me is, by utilizing TikTok on Prime Day, Amazon's able to generate social media engagement and organic buzz, while also allowing consumers to interact with both platforms simultaneously. So to me, this highlights the strategic significance that Amazon's collaboration has with TikTok and, let's say, other social platforms to come for Prime Day sales and maybe just for the platform in general. Mm-hmm. But it also really emphasizes the value of social media engagement and the organic buzz from reaching and connecting to this younger audience. And I think that'll have a big impact on Amazon's goal of driving sales through also using customer interaction.
Yeah, I thought this is an interesting concept. We talked about Prime Day on last week's Reimagining Retail show, and we talked about different flavors of Prime Day that we might expect to see, because they've got the one in the summer, they've got the one in October. And some of the suggestions that came out of that were maybe like a spring Prime Day, maybe one right after Christmas, like a New Year's Prime Day. One of the ones I was thinking of was kind of a gamified Prime Day. Where I went to university, they had a bar there and they had a game that they would play. It was basically all the drink prices would go up and down, kind of like the stock market throughout the night. And so you would start with a pint of beer would cost, I don't know, like $2.50. And so if you thought that was a good price, you would go and get a pint of beer, or you would wait to see the price come down and you'd be like, oh, prices, beer's at $1.50 right now. And you'd rush and grab one. Or if it shot up to £5, you'd be like, oh man, missed my chance. And so they kind of gamified it. And I thought that would be an interesting way to do Prime Day, keeping people engaged with the site all day as they watch the price of that new TV that they want go up or down, and they try to figure out when's the best time to buy it. You buy it maybe at $200 because you think it's not going to get any lower, and maybe it keeps going to 100 and you're gutted because you're like, oh, I should have waited. Maybe it gets more expensive. So I thought, yeah, the idea of gamifying shopping, I think there's a lot that can be done there. Story two, you're not imagining it. Brands are texting you way more, notes Emily Stewart of Vox. She writes that scrolling through her phone, she was surprised to see just how many of her texts were not from friends and family, but instead from companies. A package update from UPS makes sense, she says, but not the alert about a sale on items from Tory Burch, a brand she's never purchased. So Oscar, the most interesting sentence from this article about brands texting us more is what and why?
For me, the sentence was, you open your texts a lot more than you do your emails. And they cited a third-party data point in the article that found that open rates are incredibly high, 97%, within 15 minutes of being delivered, while email open rates are estimated to be at around 20%. So a huge, huge difference. I've noticed many more, you know, texts, even on WhatsApp, from brands and companies trying to reach me. So the reality is email boxes are littered with trash, and this is a very, very good opportunity for brands. It's a more expensive way to reach consumers, but it's something that they should lean more into. I would also say we see this internationally. Facebook Messenger, WhatsApp, WeChat, around the world, customers use these chat services to shop and interact with brands and for customer service reasoning. So it's a largely untapped market here, and I think it's an exciting one.
Yeah, that's a great point. Some of the other data points, or one of the other data points from this piece, people don't love them. They don't love texts from companies. A data company Validity found 96% of folks have felt annoyed at least occasionally by marketing text messages. However, that's people don't love. It's like advertising. People don't love bad ads. People don't like bad TV shows, bad food. And so there are ways to do this well. Plenty of examples of where you can see text messages from brands working. The article was pointing out there are moments when SMS is really clutch, like when a flight moves its gate or a shipment is delayed. And then Sarah Varney, Chief Marketing Officer of Attentive, an SMS marketing platform, also saying a few others include sending loyal customers special deals, educating folks, or alerting them when an item becomes available that they wanted. So it's as everything in life, it's about doing it the right way.
For me, texting is my safe space, unless if I opt in for a brand communications. Mm-hmm. If I were to get a text from a random company I haven't heard of, that immediately put a bad taste in my mouth and I would not shop from them.
Yeah,
so opt in for a company you want to hear from, all right, okay, can be very timely, but if not, I would not approve.
Yeah, certainly can backfire. That's all we've got time for this episode. Thank you so much to my guests. Thank you to Zach.
Thanks, Marcus.
Thank you to Oscar.
Thank you so much, Marcus.
Thank you to Lance, who's editing this episode, Victoria out on vacation. James, thank you to him, who copy edits the show, and Stuart runs the team. Thanks to everyone for listening in to the Behind the Numbers Daily and eMarketer podcast made possible by Verisk Marketing Solutions. You can tune in tomorrow for the Reimagining Retail show hosted by Sarah Lebo, where she'll be speaking to and principal analyst Susie David Canyon and also senior analyst Zach Stambaugh all about what's going on with back to school shopping.
One more shout out. I'd like to give a big congratulations to my brother Eric, who at this point will be happily engaged. So shout out Eric and Laura. Congratulations.
Congrats, folks. Yes,
congrats. Indeed.